This podcast is presented by Celery Digital. Thanks for listening.
I ended up connecting at a trade show. I'm running late to a trade show in California. I'm with a guy, and he goes, hey, let's stop and get some food. I said, no, we're going to be too late. I run to the trade show. It started at 9. It's 9 on the dot. I don't even put my bag behind the booth, and a woman walks up, and she says, tell me about your product. And I said, well, it's delicious. It's greens. It's this. It's that. And I start going through the whole thing. I go, now, who are you with? And she flips her badge, and I see Vitamin Shoppe. I said, I've been calling you guys for years. She goes, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm busy. I'm going to call you 2 weeks and we're going to talk more. I said, okay. 2 weeks later, got on the call. And she goes, okay, Kyle, I'm going to give you an opportunity. I'm going to give you 6 months to sell this product. But if it doesn't sell in 6 months, we're going to have a problem. We're going to have a nasty conversation.
Welcome to Celery Talks. This is a show that features ideas and the stories that are behind them, and I'm your host, Tad Kelsey. Celery Talks will tell the stories of business ideas and the people that made them happen. Divine Health began out of the decades-old medical practice of Dr. Don Colbert. Dr. Colbert has been practicing medicine and writing books for over 33 years. In 2007, he began formulating nutritional supplements and started Divine Health. After a rocky start and struggling through the recession of 2008 and 2009, his son, Kyle Colbert, took over the company. New to the nutritional supplement industry, Kyle says he had, well, everything to learn. He did that and more while blazing a new path to growth for the family business. Tell us about the company and the products the company offers.
Sure. Divine Health was founded in 2007. My father founded it. He wrote a book called Walking in Divine Health. And from that, he trademarked the term Divine Health. My father, Dr. Don Colbert, has always lived a very healthy lifestyle. And he's always been about nutrition. He was one of those medical doctors that really was passionate about alternative medicine, nutritional medicine. He'd, tell patients, oh, you need to take an omega-3 before anybody even knew what an omega-3 was, or vitamin D3. People would go, what's vitamin D3? Well, you get it from your, the sunlight. And so in 2007, he trademarked the term Divine Health, created a nutritional line. A manufacturer approached him because of his success with a lot of books and said, Doc, you need to make your own nutritional line. And he thought, I can do that. And so he, through several manufacturers, Douglas Laboratories, Orthomolecular, started to manufacture nutritional products. And, he started to offer Divine Health products. The line got all the way up to 90 SKUs, 90 different products. For those of you who know my father, he's, a scientist, author, and he's always reading, researching. And he's the kind of guy who'll call me at 12 o'clock at night and say, Kyle, I just read this new study. You need to make sure you get this new product. We've got to get this new ingredient. And as exciting as it is to get the new ingredient, we are a business and we can't jump on, it's like squirrel, we're going in one direction. And here we are halfway through one marketing campaign and marketing a product. And he wants to go in a totally different direction. So the business side of me has to kind of keep us on track and make sure we're focused.
All right, let's step back and talk about you and the early days of Divine Health. The first question, where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, while my dad was in medical school. But I grew up in a small city about 15 minutes east of Orlando called Lake Mary. And, spent all of my childhood years there. And then, when I turned 18, moved to California for a few years before I went off to college at Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
What did life in Lake Mary teach you?
So the Kyle Colbert in my adolescent years is probably a complete contrast to the Kyle now, because the Kyle in high school would skip school. I was in the party scene. I was not involved in any of the good extracurricular activities that you would want your child involved in. But I was extremely passionate. And I don't think you can teach the passion. I was extremely excited about life. But I did not like to be forced to sit in a chair and be taught by a teacher anything. So my adolescent years, I went to a lot of schools. I probably went to 8 or 9 different schools. In fact, my senior year, I went off to boarding school in Mississippi. And because I went to all these schools, I had to learn to adapt quickly. And, you get thrown, you're in, eighth grade, you're in a new school, you have the kids, and everybody's got their little subgroups everywhere, and you think, okay, how can I connect so that I could get in with the group, right? And so that's the first thing you're thinking. And so trying to find those moments of connecting with people so that you could ultimately try and get in the click, right? And so that you don't want to be sitting by yourself at lunch. And so what I think it really did teach me through those years was the ability to, you know, some people can fall down, you know, if they're in a situation similar to that and succumb to the pressure of being the new kid and sit by themselves. But I would want to immediately just try to penetrate and get in there, try and make them laugh, try and connect with them somehow. And I think it taught me some really good, what I call EQ. I don't know if it's actually a term. My mom would always say EQ, but you know, you have your IQ, which is great, book smarts, but EQ, it's, you know, get up there and make an audience laugh, try and figure something out. I think it really sharpened that ability.
How has your father been an influence on you?
So my dad, he's been a tremendous influence. First of all, great father, great man, great role model. You know, he was the guy, I watched him every morning go to work at the same time, come home from work same time. Very regimented, just hardwired that way. Extreme discipline to the highest degree. And also was able to be a dad. But I remember growing up and it was not as much what I saw from him, but what people said about him that I think impacted me the most. Because he was so devoted to his work, I would see, I can't tell you how many times we'd walk in a restaurant, we'd walk in and a patient would walk up and just give him the biggest hug and look at me and say, "Your father saved my life. You have no idea. I had cancer. I had type 2 diabetes. And they said they were going to have to do surgery on me. And I went to see your father and he saved me." And I would just sit here and go, man, this guy is making a serious impact on people. I want to make that kind of impact too. And just a great role model in that sense.
Okay, fast forward to college. What did you see yourself doing with the rest of your life? What did you see as your future career?
Well, so two things kind of happened. First, growing up in high school, when my dad started Divine Health, he'd always tell me, you know, I was about 16, 17, he'd go, "Kyle, you're going to take over Divine Health one day and make it a household name." And he'd say that over and over again, right? Almost like program me to think that way. But then I'd always have people say, "Are you going to be a doctor just like your dad?" And my natural response was always, "Yeah, you know, I'm going to be a doctor." And so I went to ORU, and the first thing, of course, I majored in pre-med and biology. But I minored in marketing. I don't know why, it just kind of appealed to me. Well, it didn't take long for me to figure out that I would not be the best doctor. And I had a knack for marketing. You know, I was trying my hardest in all the pre-med classes, but man, I could not get past C's. I mean, just anatomy, physiology, working on cadavers, staying up all night. I mean, it was just like, it was brutal. But my marketing classes, I loved. And I would naturally just read my marketing books and strategic management. And I just thought it was so fascinating. And I would barely try in those and I would get A's. Where I would try incredibly hard for the pre-med classes and just, you know, couldn't get by. So I switched my major to business administration major. Minor, I actually changed it to communication. And I had an opportunity. Dad wrote a book called Seven Pillars of Health. It went New York Times bestseller. They were doing all this marketing stuff. And at the time, I was a personal trainer. And so I was training right before I went to college. I lived in California. I was a personal trainer out there. And so they called me on Seven Pillars of Health and said, "Hey, we're going to do a DVD. Do you want to come out here and train for it?" Well, remember, my minor was communication. One of the reasons I did that was because I thought I was a very poor public speaker and I wanted to really sharpen those skills. And so I would get terrified at the thought of public speaking. And so I thought, oh, my first thought was, oh my gosh, we're going to do this DVD. There's going to be a TV crew there. There's going to be an audience. This is going to be terrifying. And I went down there. We did this DVD. I'll be honest with you, I'd never read one of Dad's books. I mean, he had national best-selling books, sold 5-6 million copies, and I hadn't read one of his books. And people would ask me all the time, "Have you read any of his books?" And I could never tell anybody no, you know. So I'd go, "Oh, yeah, of course. They're great books, aren't they?" But that exposed me for the first time. I had to go through, and I was forced to read his book, Seven Pillars of Health. And that changed my life. And I looked at Dad, I said, "This is an incredible book. This is the first time I've read your book." He said, "Well, good. I'm glad we got you to do this DVD because it at least forced you to read one of my books." But I really got, you know, I got just a little taste of understanding a little at a deeper level, because growing up with my dad, I knew about health. And being a personal trainer, I knew about health. But this was a deeper understanding of a philosophy that really resonated with me and really combining just the kind of the whole mind-body-spirit approach and some real sound advice on you know, the seven pillars. Basically, it goes over, you know, your water, your sleep, your stress, detox, supplements, the food. But after reading that, I'd say I really had a passion. And then I, because he said, you're going to take over Divine Health and make it a household name. One day you're going to run it. So I had my mindset, okay, I'm not going to be the doctor, but I'm going to still see if I can hold him to that Divine Health thing. Because now I'd been taking a bunch of marketing classes and thought, I think I could really help this company.
So right out of college, you come start working for the company, or how did you get to Divine Health?
So while I was at ORU, they hired my uncle who had an MBA and a really smart guy, and he was running Divine Health. It was a one-man band. I mean, Divine Health at this time was just an online website, direct-to-consumer, and I would call him and he would say, oh, yeah, you got to send out email lists and promotions here and there. And I'd listen to him and I'd go, oh, I just learned this. You need to try this and check this out. And so I was being primed for Divine Health. So by the time I graduated, he was running Divine Health under Dad's kind of leadership and formulating and everything. I was really kind of out of the loop, but I had a good understanding of some of the products we carry, but knew nothing about the business strategy, business model, none of that. And I really just, I managed his medical practice. And I came in, he had an office of about 10 nurses, two doctors. And I came in and I said, okay, guys, let's go through the whole system, the whole model. Let's figure out how we can improve efficiencies, you know, reduce costs, reduce waste, you know, essentially focus on patient care, make sure we're improving all that, and try to implement some business strategies, basics, you know, follow-ups, good marketing information, advertising, billboards, radio shows. We launched a syndication of 30 radio shows. You know, did a bunch of these really just to try and drive the traffic into the practice. Right outside of college, I wanted Divine Health, but knew I could only play a small role and really just aiding in my uncle. Until there was a time when, I'll never forget, my mom, who kind of handled the book, she would come in, she'd be so frustrated. And if you've ever watched the Titanic, if you've seen Molly Brown, you know that one? That's my mom, okay? She is Miss Passion. She says it like it is, will tell you like it is, you know, wears her heart on her sleeve, great woman. But she'd come in so passionate, and she would just be so fired up. And she'd go, we're not making any money. Credit cards constantly being maxed out in Divine Health. What is going on? And I'd go, well, let's go through the numbers. Let's go through the margins. Let's figure this out. It got to a point where it was kind of a sink or swim kind of moment. And my uncle was asked lightly and politely to leave. And there was no one to run Divine Health because it was basically a company that was going under. I mean, it was going to be dissolved. And it was within months of going bankrupt. Credit cards are being maxed out. Invoices for manufacturers are, you know, 60, 90 days late. You know, we're talking now 2008, 2009. Supplements are considered a luxury good. During that time, no one's buying luxury goods. You know, they're just trying to, the only people seeing an increase in sales is Walmart, you know, because the only thing people wanted was food on their table and gas in their car. And so buying a supplement was the last thing on people's mind. And so I had to be really creative and really dig deep. And there was no mentors in this industry because obviously what we were doing wasn't working. So there was no one within the company for me to go, hey, how do we do this? Because that wasn't the right strategy. So I had to reach out to some people that were in the industry that I really didn't know, but I wanted to know. And I was vulnerable. And I called and I said, hey, I need some help. What do I do? They would give me little tidbits of advice. And it's amazing when you ask other guys, even though they're considered competitors of yours, how they may not give you the complete plate of information that you need, but they'll steer you in the right direction most of the time. That's what they did. And I asked lots of questions. We met with nutraceutical reps, which are like pharmaceutical reps, but just for the natural industry. And I'd ask them, where do you go? What trade shows do you go to? And they go, oh, you got to check this out. And so I'd fly to New Jersey, and just one thing led to the next. And that, I'd say about 5 years into working, managing my dad's practice is when I actually took over Divine Health.
So you'd been working for the company for about 4 or 5 years, and then you took over, and that was the state it's in. It's a little bit rocky. Looks like it's actually going under. What were the first moves that you made after consulting competitors who were willing to give you some advice, some insight? At the time, the company's only sold on really one website. It's kind of the frontier, which it's, this seems so weird to say that only 10 years ago was early days of e-commerce. It seems like that wasn't that long ago, but it's e-commerce has exploded so much in the last 10 years, but it's still the early days. You're just selling on the one website. What were the next moves that you made?
You know, I was the kind of guy, I read a lot of business books, business strategy, storyboarding, branding, advertising. This is when Amazon was starting to come on the scene. They were still focusing on books, really weren't releasing products. I'd go to YouTube and literally put in keywords like marketing for your business, online marketing for your business, best strategies for your online business, right? And I'm just watching video after video after video trying to understand what the heck people are doing that's profitable. And I put together a little strategy and I said, okay, we got to do this a multi-prong. One thing I found out was I was paying way too much for emails. We had a web developer that was sending out the emails and the web developer was charging a certain amount of money. So I knew, okay, I can cut costs there. I had to make our designs more current. I had to redesign the labels, which wasn't an extra cost because these manufacturers were actually doing this at a free charge for us. So I could redesign the labels. They had their own design in-house. As long as we were ordering the product, we could get the designs. Then I started to put out ads for a designer just to work on contract because I knew we had to bring our designs up to speed. You never want, FYI, you never want a programmer doing your designs, okay? You want a programmer and developer doing development and designers doing design. And I had a programmer and developer doing designs. And so we brought our designs up to speed. And I looked at our top products, and it's the old 80-20 rule. We talked about this earlier. You know, 80% of your revenue are going to come from your top 20% of your products. And so what I started to do is we went from 90 SKUs or 90 different products, and we cut it down immediately to 60. And everybody said, oh, you know, you're going to lose money. You're going to go under. You got to have that. People want a one-stop shop. Maybe you don't get a ton of sales on that, but it's the perception where they think they can get a bunch of products. Hogwash. I dropped it from 90 to 60. We increased revenue, but our problem really wasn't necessarily the revenue, it was the margins. I got an invoice. This is where I'll never forget this moment. One of our manufacturers accidentally sent me their cost invoice for whatever reason, and I'll never forget this, but their invoice had 7 times margins on it. 7 times, right? Now, I thought that was crazy until I read the book 4-Hour Workweek. In the 4-Hour Workweek, there's a whole chapter on make sure your margins are 7 times. I thought, my gosh. Granted, that business was seeing rapid growth. This the business, the manufacturer that sent us that invoice by mistake, was seeing rapid growth. And I talked to CEO and they're building new buildings and expanding. Why is that? They had 7 times markup. I thought, my gosh, how do you get 7 times markup? That's impossible. Look at my cost on these products. If I do 7 times markup, I'll sell it for a fortune. No one will buy it. Well, it wasn't in what I sell it for. It's in what I buy it for. And so I put my focus so much on the revenues rather than the cost. And you really need twofold. You need, and you kind of have to split yourself up. And if you have a small company, you need to make sure that you focus your efforts not so much on what you retail it at, but on what you buy it at. And I was under that perception that we could not get our costs down. Little by little, I looked and I would do, now we didn't have enough revenue for me to go and buy, you know, thousands and thousands of units to get my cost down. So I had to be real creative. So I went from 90 units to 60 units. So that extra money that I would spend on those extra 30 SKUs, I now could leave up and buy more of our top 1 and 2 product. And so I'd go in and say, okay, these are our top 2 selling products. Can you just give me 15% break? And they'd go, yeah, sure, we'll do that. I think, wow, that was easy. All I had to do was ask. So I got 15% break on my number 1 and 2 product. So now all of a sudden I have a little bit more margin. So guess what I can do? I could do some advertising. I've got an advertising budget. And I could do buy 2, get 3 free, buy 3, get 4 free, which generates more sales, which generates more calls. I could do an email now. And when I do a 15% off discount, it's now like I don't even discount because now I got that 15% off from the manufacturer, right? One thing led to another thing that led to another thing where I meet another manufacturer, meet another supplier, another raw materials guy. And the key to this is being curious and never accepting what your cost is now is the cost that you'll always have. Too many companies think this. They think I have got a great rate and that rate, because I've got it great, will only increase. When the truth is with your manufacturers and some of your products, you meet the right opportunities. There are opportunities where you can actually get some of your costs down if you're creative. For example, maybe you're buying the product as a finished product. Well, what if you were the person that ordered the caps? Or what if you were the person that ordered the laces if you're making shoes? Or, you know, if you're offering a service, you know, maybe you don't have to pay. Maybe there's one guy that can offer 2 services and lump those 2 together. Whatever it is, there is a way for you to be really creative in getting those costs down because it alleviates the opportunity for you to market and advertise. You don't want to advertise a product or service that you don't get at a good cost. So you've got to make sure you're focusing on advertising products that you get a good cost on so that you can drive the more sales, have the margins to continue to grow and do advertising. That's a long-winded answer to say, digital marketing, which included email marketing, getting the cost down, taking the SKUs from 90 to 60. That was kind of when we started to breathe.
When did you realize that people wanted what Divine Health was offering?
So we had one product that was just selling, and I just couldn't, I would try and advertise other products because maybe I had better margins on them. And it just went, it just kept going back to this one individual product. And for me, it was a greens product, a green supreme food. No matter what we could do some simple marketing campaign, people wanted to order it. And I thought, my goodness, this is the easiest thing to market. It's greens. And we thought, okay, let's do this. Let's focus all of our efforts on two things. Making an incredibly innovative product that is this, so it's green supreme food. Let's make the most innovative greens. Because you would think, oh, Kyle, maybe people were buying it because it was so innovative. No, no. It was just anybody listening right now, there's a product or service that you know that if you talk about, there's going to be people who are going to be just likely or more interested in buying it. And for whatever reason, it's easier to sell, but maybe you don't want to sell it because you just don't get good margins on it. Well, instead of saying, well, I'm going to start talking about it, and that way, if I don't talk about it, it won't sell, I thought, okay, let me be creative on twofold. Let's make this product the best product, right? Because if it sells when it's pretty good, imagine if it's the best, meaning at the time it wasn't organic, it wasn't non-GMO, it wasn't, we didn't use fermented vegetables or grasses, there were all these different things. And so let's make it the best simultaneously, seeing if we can buy the raw materials individually and drive down our costs so that we can make this affordable for consumers. And that truly is a recipe for success. If you can have a truly innovative product that people will love, get excited about, and then also make sure that you have your cost at a point to where you can offer it at a competitive price and still run promos, discounts, so that you can get that whole other consumer base that is just waiting for the discounts.
What event or events caused the greatest growth for Divine Health?
I saw the growth and the opportunity in wholesale. I believed that wholesale is the greatest opportunity for us because when you wholesale a product, you set your product up for other people to sell your product. Think about what it costs to hire a sales rep, right? And so you think of those costs. Well, imagine if you wholesale your product to someone who's going to sell it. You are making money off someone who is going to sell your product, right? And so you really, they are almost paying you to become a sales rep for you, right? And so if you're a company with a low marketing budget, which we were had like really low marketing budget, and you could wholesale the product and you could get the product in front of more eyeballs, in front of more people, that was my goal. So what I did was I reached out to a website that was selling his books. And I thought, well, if they're selling his books, hopefully they'll also sell his products. And I reached out to a real small company and still our customer today. This is probably 6-7 years ago. I said, hey, I see you're selling Dr. Colbert's books. We have a product line. It's fantastic. I can send you some wholesale pricing. Would you be interested in selling this? He said, sure, send me a wholesale price. I think we got an order for $170. I think the profit was $40, something like that. And I was freaking out. I thought, my first wholesale order is amazing. We're off and running. We're off to the big times, right? Little did I know, I had a long road ahead of me. I called some of the larger online retailers that sell supplements, and they said, there's no way. They wouldn't return my calls, my emails. When I did talk to them, they'd say, oh, you're too small. It's too high of a risk. The other question they would ask is, who's selling your product? Because they wanted to know if their competitors are selling the product, they've already taken the risk. And if they're selling your product and it's still there, then they too want to sell the product because they don't want to, they don't want their consumers going to their website and not seeing the product on there. So basically, they'd like to see who did the risk analysis on your product and if it's selling. So I thought, okay, I can't go to the big boys right away. You got to prove yourself. So I went and I called a little bit bigger company than the first account, just a little bit bigger, kind of comparable. And I called and they said, no, they said, you're kind of small. Who else? I said, oh, we're selling on this website over here. And they went and they said, oh, okay, we'll bring you on. I thought, oh, great. This is like a $220 order, right? It was like, eureka. Then I called another, just a little bit bigger, and I stepstoned it. Each account was just a little bit bigger, but big enough so that they can compare themselves to. It's kind of like you don't want to, you know, sell your lemonade at a local lemonade stand and then go to Kroger and say, oh, I want you to sell our lemonade. They're going to be like, well, who sells it? Well, I sell it at the local lemonade stand. No, Kroger wants to hear you're selling it at Target. You know, they want to see that you're selling it at another comparable chain. Then I called Vitamin Shoppe. One of my buddies said, Kyle, you need to go after Vitamin Shoppe. 80% of our business comes from Vitamin Shoppe. So that knowledge and that piece of information, I hyper-focused on Vitamin Shoppe. I ended up connecting at a trade show. I'm running late to a trade show in California. I'm with a guy and he goes, hey, let's stop and get some food. I said, no, we're going to be too late. I run to the trade show. It started at 9. It's 9 on the dot. I don't even put my bag behind the booth, and a woman walks up, and she says, tell me about your product. And I said, well, it's delicious. It's greens. It's this. It's that. And I start going through the whole thing. I go, now who are you with? And she flips her badge and I see Vitamin Shoppe. I said, I've been calling you guys for years. Now, this is key. If you don't do email marketing, this is why you need to do email marketing. I took the buyer, got the buyer's email and put them on a buyer list. And every time I do a trade show or did something important, I'd send an email list to all these emails that I compiled from all the buyers. Well, one of these was, hey, I'm at the trade show. Here's my booth number. Come and visit me. And I did a picture of me in the booth. I sent that and it went to the head buyer of Vitamin Shoppe because I found his email and put it on the list and I never got responses. And he contacted the buyer at the show and said, hey, we just stopped by this kid's booth. He's there. He's booth 8088. Stop by. And it's 9 o'clock. Had I been there 1 minute later, I'd have missed her. I said, well, I thought so-and-so was the buyer. She goes, he is the buyer. He sent me here. So I did the pitch. She goes, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm busy. I'm going to call you 2 weeks and we're going to talk more. I said, okay. 2 weeks later, got on the call. And she goes, okay, Kyle, I'm going to give you an opportunity. I'm going to give you 6 months to sell this product. But if it doesn't sell in 6 months, we're going to have a problem. We're going to have a nasty conversation. I said, I will make sure it sells. So to make a long story short, we got Vitamin Shoppe, all 750 locations, and get the POs. That has led into tremendous opportunities because now, like I said, accounts now ask, well, who are you with? When you say you're with these accounts, it's very easy to get other accounts. I needed to learn. Had I gone straight for the big boys and they brought me on, that conversation about her saying, if you don't sell in 6 months, I would have not had my act together enough to have sold through in 6 months. But us gradually increasing revenue, gradually increasing an experience and understanding of the industry, who your competitors are, what it takes to be successful. There's a reason why you want to crawl before you walk in any business. And once you have the capital, then you want to run. But the worst thing that can happen is if you're running, something happens and you get tripped up, you're just going to fall and you're going to cause a bunch of damage. And those relationships that you spend all that time building are destroyed.
In the midst of the growth and the fact that you either had a large role in the company or led the company from early on, what is the most difficult challenge you've had to overcome?
Growth. Growth at every phase of the business is different. Growing from 400,000 to 1 million is its own set of challenges. Growing to 1 million to 2 million is its own set of challenges. Growing 2 million to 5 million is its own set of challenges. And growing from 5 million to 10 million is its own set of challenges. Every stage is a learning curve. And if you haven't been through it before and you don't have someone holding you by the hand explaining to you, hey, this is what's going to happen when you get to this, because it really does, the amount of revenue dictates the amount of work. And the amount of work dictates how many people you need to have, and how many people you have determines how well organized your company is, because your weaknesses will really be exposed the more people you hire. You know, when you hire three people, yeah, you can be unorganized. You don't have to have a CRM. You don't have to have a handbook or an FAQ. But then you get to eight people and, you know, now you need to have kind of staff meetings and you need to keep everybody on the same page and you need to send out memos. And because now, you know, you find yourself repeating the same thing to three different people and you go, gosh, I need to get everybody in a room. Okay, let's do a powwow twice a week now, okay? Then you get to 20 people and now you're having internal conflict and staff challenges and people, you know, just other HR related issues start to come into play. And so that's why I think you can do a company one of two ways and they're equally as successful. I've taken more of the contracted route, but you don't have to. The reason is because of some of these things that I just said. I find communication a lot easier to be streamlined on the contracting. But when you get to 10 employees, you really need a CRM. When you get to 20 employees, you really do need some kind of HR system in place. 25, 30 employees, 40 employees, you're going to need possibly a CFO. You may need a VP of operations. You really may need, even need that depending on your business at 20, 25 people, because the business starts to get more complex and more departments. You got to categorize it based on three things. And this is how I categorize mine is finance, sales, and marketing, right? And so you've got your sales department, you know, you got your head of sales, and that guy reports to you. Your head of sales is in charge of, we'll say, 4 or 5 salespeople. And then you've got your finance guy, right? It's your CPA, it's your CFO, it's whoever they are. And they're in charge of the finances. And their accounts payable, accounts receivable, but they're going to make sure your books are in line. You're going to make sure you're getting paid, all those things. And the CPA will be in charge of your accounts receivable, accounts payable. And then you've got your marketing. And your market could be your digital marketing guys, could be your social media guys, it could be your print, it could be your designer, your web developer. All those things are going to go and tie into marketing. They all have to be on the same page. Now, for us, we've got kind of a fourth, which is production, because we're in the manufacturing side. But for most people, that wouldn't apply. And so, but you have a head of each one of these departments, and you have one of these people. Now, in the beginning, you go, Kyle, I don't have any heads. I don't have any budget, you know? So, but you have to make sure you divvy those positions up, because each one of those positions is a certain personality trait. You don't want an accountant doing accounts receivable and payables, also doing sales calls. You don't want your digital marketer or your social media marketer, your developer and your designer, you know, handling accounts receivables, accounts payables, and you also don't want them talking to salespeople. So you have to make sure that in your head, you're hiring separately for those positions. And you could contract separately for those positions. And or you can hire a head for sales, and then the rest of your salespeople are all contracted. You could hire a head marketer and the rest of the marketing position, social media, you know, even CRM, web development, digital design, all that is contracted out, but is run by your marketing guy in-house. So there's ways to be creative where you don't have to hire five people for each group. I like to hire one main person, and then I'll hire a contractor to simultaneously work with that position once they get hired.
What has e-commerce done for your business? Just in the evolution of e-commerce, you've been on the curve of that, and your company has really grown as e-commerce has evolved.
So e-commerce is the most fascinating part of the business. I thrive on it. I love it. It's exciting. It's changing constantly. But the digital marketing front is where we're seeing a lot of growth. Because you're really in more control of your growth, I feel like. You can get data a lot faster. You can act on that data a lot faster. So we break the company up into a pie when it comes to digital marketing. Most of our clients on the private label side, because we have Divine Health and private label, but on the private label side, we work with a lot of Amazon clients, and they make products with us, and they want to sell on Amazon. And the first thing they say is, oh yeah, I got this great marketing strategy. I'm going to sell on Amazon, and you know, I'm going to do some SEO and SEM and some retargeting advertising. Or I'll hear, oh, I've got this digital marketing strategy. We're going to create a website, and it's going to be amazing, and we're going to get some social media influencers. It's going to market the product or service on social media, and they're going to drive a bunch of traffic. My point in saying that is digital marketing is not one, two, or three. It's a whole pie of things for it to be capitalized and for you to leverage it and actually make a tremendous amount of money on it. For example, if you're going to have a product on Amazon, that's great. You're going to do SEO on Amazon, that's great. What we find now is over 50% of consumers, when you say, hey, check out my product, the first place they look at is Amazon. Over 50% of consumers now. It used to be they go to the website. A lot of people now, they still have the website on their business card. Well, guess what? When you give your business card, your customer isn't even going to your website. They're going to check it out on Amazon first. So what I tell people is make sure you spend more money on your Amazon page than you do your website. And they go, what? Yes, I'll say that again. Spend more money on your Amazon page than you do your actual physical website. What does that mean? Your A+ page, the videos on the thumbnails, the product images. How's the image? Is it digitally built? Is it a professional looking image? How's the content? Was it professionally written? A lot of people are still focusing on building out the website, when if they do it on Amazon, it's a multi-pronged approach. You have to sell your product on Amazon. You want to make sure you've got the product on your website. You want to make sure it's got good content. You want to make sure when they hit your website, you've got remarketing, Google remarketing, which means those ads that you see that pop up everywhere. You want to make sure that you've got a video associated with your product. Customers are 7 times more likely to purchase a product when there's a video associated with it. You want to make sure you're sending emails. Affiliate marketing. Affiliate marketing is being done differently now. So that's why when people go, oh, I got a digital marketing strategy, Kyle. I go, what's your marketing strategy? And they go, well, I'm going from social media to this. Well, social media is part of the strategy. We didn't even talk about that. You want to make sure you could do social media retargeting. You could do Facebook retargeting. Do all that, because that'll tie back into your overall retargeting strategy. Get influencer marketing. That's great. You will get sales from that. But if you are not doing these other pieces, if you don't have your product on Amazon, if you're not doing retargeting, if you don't have an affiliate page where you're driving your traffic, digital marketing is not one, two, or three. It's a whole pie of things.
Looking back, what is something that has happened that you didn't expect to happen?
You know, I'm doing this solo. I really, by this point in time, thought I would have had another me. But the truth is, you won't ever find another you. No one is going to be as passionate about your business as you. No one is going to care about the details as much as you. It's just unfortunate. Because this is your passion, you are getting everybody else on board. Now, you will find people that are passionate about your brand. You will find people who work hard. They'll be tenacious. They will get the job done. But to find another you, it's just not going to happen. And I had to have some other business mentors, friends tell me that, because I would say, I'm going to find another me. And they go, Kyle, it's just not going to happen. There, you are you, and you're doing what you're doing, because if they were another you, they would be doing it themselves. And that's just the truth. And coming to that realization was kind of tough, because you can find really good guys to help you, but to find another you is very difficult. And that it kind of is like tooting your own horn. You're like, oh, I'm all powerful and I know all the... No, not that, but business owners listening to this, they'll understand, because there's a certain, you won't sleep at night. You can't even sleep at night if you know there's a problem. You know what I mean? I mean, you don't care if you go on zero sleep for 3 days to figure out the problem, if it's a problem, because it's all on you, you know, and you've got to figure it out. So that's when I say you can't find another you, that's what I'm kind of talking about. Not so much as the information, the knowledge and all that, you can find that.
Where do you see the company in 5 to 10 years?
5 to 10 years. So I was 16 years old. My dad said Divine Health was going to be a household name. So, you know, you will know if people talk about Divine Health and you go, oh, yeah, I think I've heard of that brand. I've succeeded. That's my ultimate goal. How do I get there? Mass retail. We are just like 5-Hour Energy. We're talking to all the different retail channels about different projects, all the way from 7-Eleven to Circle K to Kroger, Target. We're doing projects right now with a lot in business development. So, you know, I was pretty vulnerable with my staff. I'll be vulnerable with you right now. And my goal for this company, really, I think my passion came because I really want to make my dad proud. I mean, really, when we're kids and you see your dad working really hard and all that, you know, you really ultimately, this is dad's baby. And so me taking this over, it's now my baby, but really I want to make him proud, right? Because it's your dad. And so for me, you know, people go, well, what's your vision? Can I tell you? I want to make him proud. And he said, Kyle, one day you're going to make this a household name. So by golly, we're going to make this household. And people go, no, you shouldn't do it for your dad. What do you want, Kyle? But everybody's got their own why. That's my big why. I want to make sure he knows it's in good hands, it was taken care of, and it was fulfilled to its full fruition. That's what I want to make sure he knows. And so that's what I'm set out to do. Someone else's why, it may be because you got to provide for your family and you had to come up with a good idea. Someone else's why is because you had an aha moment and you came up with this business idea. Sometimes it's a very purpose-driven company because something happened in your family or something growing up. But do I love helping people? Absolutely. Do I love making products of the best that I can stamp, you know, my last name on and say these are the highest quality and they will compete against the top brands? Absolutely. I love all that. But my why, the thing that gets me up in the morning, that makes me stay up for 3 straight days, if there's a problem, the thing that, you know, I can't sleep, is to make sure my dad knows this is in good hands.
You can find Divine Health products on Costco.com. Amazon, and at The Vitamin Shop, as well as their website, shop.drcolbert.com. That's our show for today. Thanks for joining us. Join us next episode as Calvin Carter, the founder of mobile device app developer Bottle Rocket, tells us how he went from completing projects by using Craigslist to developing apps for the world's most recognizable brands. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes, and you can also listen on Stitcher, as well as podomatic.com.